Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today I'm joined by Tara Pollock, who is the SVP of Marketing at Revenue Grid. And Tara, I'm so excited to dive into this playbook with you today. We are focused on pipeline acceleration and enabling your sales team to create these highly personalized experiences for those best fit potential customers that are right on the doorstep of actually buying. So Tara, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Mason. Yeah, I'm excited for our conversation today.
So I'm going to go ahead and dig right into it. As you were thinking through kind of building out an ABM program, there's a lot of places that you could start. I'm curious, as you were starting to build out this program, like why in pipeline opportunities?
Yeah, I think for us, I've worked historically at kind of smaller startups, and I don't believe when you're starting something new, honestly, any program, but especially ABM, the bigger the net, I think the least likelihood of success, honestly. When I say success, I also mean like adoption, like within your organization of getting people on board with it. So if you can niche down, and I always say like, okay, like let's try to pick the segment or, you know, whether it's customers or prospects that knows us the best, that is highly engaged, that's not like completely net new. And so that's why I always say, like, whether it's mid funnel, wherever you're working, maybe it's customer expansion plays, like let's start there first and foremost.
I love it. I talk with a lot of people about just stacking the deck in your favor when building ABM and on in pipeline opportunities or customers, you're going to have the best data, which is always the hardest part. So love to hear it. The question I have is just, okay, so we agree, let's go build a pipeline program. Where do you go from there? Like, what are the actual things that you were doing? And what was the problem you were trying to solve when you're starting to build out this program?
Yeah, I think really we started at the data and figuring out, number one, who. At the time, what I'm referencing is a lot. We built a get accept of like the actual role and persona at certain accounts and what those look like, you know, the pains and challenges of each one. Are we targeting a full buying committee? Is it one person from an account? We ended up doing kind of like multi-threading. So then as a marketer, you know, oh, you just turned like targeting an account of like one person to like actually three, say, for example, of like messaging and lists and all that. And you kind of just like 3x your work a little bit. However, we know it takes a lot of touch points and activity to like actually gain awareness and engagement further down. So we started with that and we worked hand in hand actually with two AEs. And I think that's such an important part of this because it shouldn't be like, oh, marketing's running an ABM play over here. What are they doing? How is it going? It's like, no, we literally need to do this together. And so we would brainstorm every week of like the strategy and the approach and really try to work together on like the whole plan before we did anything, because we wanted to make sure everyone's voice was heard, number one. And number two, when we were to launch this thing, it's like, this is a collaboration combined effort. So.
Yeah. So again, what I'm hearing is you took in pipeline opportunities, identified these are the ones that probably need the most help accelerating. Work through what are our personas, what's the content that they need, what are the problems that they're trying to solve, and then built it from beginning to end with your sales team so that, again, when it actually came time to using the stuff, it actually used it because they felt invested in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we were super open with our sales team, like, let's brainstorm together. What do you guys think would bring value to their everyday? You know, is it we did things like invite them on our podcast Or should we send them kind of a, you know, like a fun surprise and delight little swag, or, you know, like really have everybody be involved in the process? Because I think when it's launched without that, people think like, oh, I don't know much about it. And it's almost this, you have to define success together and what that looks like way in the beginning. And I think as a marketer, you have to constantly say, this was our definition. This was our definition. Because we all know that when something's launched and it takes time, or it's working, it's not working, people will start to just put in, oh, well, that didn't work. Or it wasn't exactly what we wanted. But if you can define, okay, you know, within the first 30 days, we just want engaged activity. What does that look like? Is it a response? Is it, you know, things like that? So I really think the key here is like collaborating with the right people from the beginning.
Well, I always love chatting with you. We're always on the same wavelength. What I want to dig into a little bit more is specifically in the context of this pipeline acceleration program, what was the core metric of success? Was it, again, pipeline acceleration? Was it an increased deal value? Like, as you were building out the program, what was the hypothesis of the improvement that would be achieved?
Yeah. So really what we were aiming for was engaged in highly qualified accounts. We kind of broke it into two within a certain time frame. We said we really want what we're defining as a highly engaged account. And then like the ultimate kind of like phase two, I would say, is a demo, a meeting, like an opportunity to actually meet with the right, you know, stakeholders. And we consider it a win if we got one of them. We all know it's very difficult to get them, you know, together to do something. Eventually in the sales process, you should be doing that. But we kind of like parsed it out, because even though we started with what I'd call engaged segments of, you know, customers and prospects, you almost have to treat it like it's a brand new buying cycle.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is, again, working through, we've already got some level of engagement and some level of understanding. We've already maybe had a conversation. The question is now, how do we get that demo with all the right decision makers? And I've started to see this a lot in even our sales cycles with some of our larger teams, like especially on a global scale, sometimes when you're working with multiple regions, like bringing everybody together to think through, how does this impact me? How does this impact the US? Like that, just even from just a pure calendar perspective, like you have very limited time blocks in which you have overlap. So that time is super precious for your decision makers. So now I want to dig into, what were the actual functional tactics that you guys did to then accomplish that goal of getting all your decision makers into the room?
Yeah, so we actually built out this kind of map, and it was really interesting because it was like sales ownership and then marketing ownership of the different tactics of when this were to start. And what we did was kind of warm them up from a marketing side of the house. So that included, you know, email nurture, targeted, like personalized ads. And then almost each part of the process, we had like, and no one likes to hear this, but a manual activity. And so one of those was a personalized LinkedIn outreach by somebody on the marketing team, because you have the, I think, distinct opportunity as a marketer. Well, our, you know, persona was sales leaders and stuff, that they don't typically gut like knee jerk reaction, like they're asking me for a demo. So like if I send somebody a message around something, we have like a higher likelihood of somebody looking at it, reading and responding, over somebody, unfortunately, with the title of like business development or, you know, something like that. So the marketing part, that's what we did in the beginning. And then we figured out the timing of when sales would actually come in. And a lot of what they were doing was able to do that more personalized outreach as well.
I love the call out of getting executives involved to just send a message executive to executive. I just found that the peer-to-peer connection is always a better approach for actually opening up the door. And then once the door has been opened, bringing in your BD or your AE teams to actually the next run the deal cycle from there.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, you have to be okay with that. Of course, this doesn't scale super well, right? But I think in the beginning, when you're testing and trying it out and seeing if it works, like the response rate, you know, to a leader kind of outside of the sales is just much higher, honestly. And they, you know, I'm not saying it was like super successful, like they're instantly wanting to talk to me or someone on our team, but there were the response rate of actually getting an answer was so much higher.
So that's an example of one of the things that we ended up doing of just, again, how do we open up the door in the first place? Once the door was opened, I'm curious, like, then what did your S or your BD teams and your AE teams do to actually accelerate the deal and get it to a close?
Yeah. So sometimes it would be easy as like a handover and then they would kind of run with it. But sometimes you could do like a joint call together. Cause like the last thing we want to do is, you know, make people feel like the marketing side of the house, like duped them. Right. And then like they show up and, you know, me or whoever is just like not even there. Right. And of course you have to be very selective with you do this internally. That's why it all comes back to the beginning segment of data who's worth doing this for, right? Like who's kind of worth the time to test that out. And so you get to be really specific, I think also with, you know, the pricing, packaging, ACV, like what you're actually offering them. I wouldn't suggest to do this if you're, you know, targeting very low end, you know, ACV or, you know, SMB or whatever you're selling, it has to be worth the time. So we either did it from a joint perspective, but honestly, a lot of people, what I was trying to do was also add value, inviting them on our podcast, giving them a piece of content that I felt was valuable for them. And then they were actually more like kind of open-minded to saying like, hey, you know what? I would like to see, you know, what you guys do. I've never seen that before. And it was more a curiosity thing. And then that's kind of when sales would take over to kind of like nurture and really get them in the minds of like, oh, this might be a need to have right now. That's always the goal. The need to have, that's a critical kind of like trigger point where it's like, oh, that's like a nice to have.
Yeah. I mean, it really sounds like the core channels once you engage were a lot of one-to-one outreach through LinkedIn, email, and just like truly building a relationship. And that, again, I could not agree more on the like, this is not scalable and doesn't have to be. That doesn't, like, not everything has to scale. That's okay. But if there's a high intent, high engagement, right fit account, like, yes, engage that person. There's probably only like 20 a month that truly fit that criteria. So I love that call out. The question is just around content. So you recognize that by building a relationship, people have a curiosity and it's not a recognition of need yet. So I'm curious, what content did you use to showcase this is a need to have, like you have to actually use Revenue Grid in order to actually achieve your goals?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to do that is a lot of like industry data and use cases and customer stories. And so that's really, it's like putting yourself in the prospect's shoes. If you can like understand or the customer, their top three challenges in their role in their everyday life and figuring out the content that feeds into that. So depending on the account, like we have a lot of Gartner research that luckily we're included in, or Forrester, IDC. And so we'll, you know, take a little, you know, excerpts or blurbs from it and be like, hey, does this resonate with you? Is this a challenge you have? And if you've done your research, right, and know your ICP, like, you know, they're going to say yes. Like, it's not like a, oh no, you know, we're amazing at that. Right. It's like asking a marketer, you know, do you have all your attribution figured out? And everybody just kind of like laughs and just like, that's a long conversation. Right. So that's really what we did, was kind of try to figure out the like immediate, like, yes, tell me more. If I could solve this problem for you, like, would your day-to-day life be so much easier? And that's how we like would center around the content that we wanted to share with them.
And I specifically love the use of third-party resources and not just always first party. I think, don't get me wrong, like a lot of what we're helping our clients do is figure out how to use our existing first party content that they've created and figuring out their content inventory. But when I just saw Sam McKenna like post and her whole team posted that she was featured in USA Today. And like that outside resource adds such a layer of credibility. Because it's earned. And I especially love there have been some sellers that I've worked with that would use third-party resources that don't have any mention of that organization, but it's just the third-party data and research and validation, like, hey, this is a problem. And we've been talking about how we can solve this problem for you. So like, does this resonate? And again, just kind of feeding the content to keep the conversation going, I think is such a smart call out. I'm curious in your context, obviously you had Gartner and Forrester that mentioned some things for you guys. Like, how are you helping your teams curate that content for third-party validation?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I actually am directly responsible for and am on, you know, the lookout. I'm lucky enough to have access to a lot of their databases, but, you know, if you've never worked with kind of the analyst relations or something like that, there's, you know, if you're in a partnership with them, there is resources directly for that to like, just ask, you know, like, hey, can you keep me apprised of like new reports coming out, new research, you know, new documentation? They have so much information and it takes a lot of time to weed through. So I would like lean on, you know, if you have a direct relationship with them or, you know, just simple setup alerts within their databases and things like that. And it doesn't have to take you a lot of time. You just have to set up, you'll love this, the process and like the operations backend, right? If I'm, you know, doing anything for revenue intelligence platform to ping me, I have an alert that literally comes every single morning. I scan through, I look at it. At the end of the day, people aren't really going to read a research paper. Gartner will kill me. No, that's 125 pages. They're just like really not, right? So I think finding those and just like constantly feeding your sales team of, hey, you know, I think this is really valuable. This is how I would use it, or you guys might want to think about using it. And then, you know, logging that in a certain, you know, place internally for them to reach it whenever they need.
Yeah. I specifically just love the call out a process. You know that I would, but I'm curious on that just around, this is a lot of the validation. One of the other things that you had mentioned earlier is using GitAccept to create these really highly personalized content experiences. So I'm curious, like, how did you guys actually use GitAccept to significantly accelerate the pipeline?
Yeah, that was actually a really fun creative part, I think, working at GitAccept because of the platform itself as a digital sales room, you know, can host content that you want and make it super creative. And the back end of like, if you send something out, we did this with events too, as an example, with like marketing as like a follow-up of like recaps of inbound. And we could actually see the analytics of who opened it, how long they stayed on certain parts. And you can just be really fun with it. And so that's how we would kind of approach almost like a personalization standpoint, because you can include in video when they like open the digital sales room, and you can just, it doesn't have to be what people think, like proposal and contract and like a typical sales, you know, type of when you get to that level of selling, you can create almost anything that you want. And so we would always just try to be like bold and creative and think through something that somebody would just remember. That was always our key, is like be memorable. And some of the stuff we were sending out, like say before an event or before campaigns or after, would just be fun and had a human element to it. You know, there was one that I had literally my dog wearing a GitAccept like t-shirt that I literally took the picture in like the backyard. You know, like we tried to be fun and bold and creative about it, because nobody just wants to get the normal like room where it's like, here's the demo, you know, like here's the pieces of content. So yeah, GitAccept, I would say, has a leg up in that, you know, be memorable, because you can use your own product for that.
Yeah, and I think especially right now, there's so many organizations that are focused not just on technical capabilities, but also culture fit. So doing those things that actually highlight and showcase some component of culture, and that we're actually people and not all just AI, I think is a great way to really accelerate the pipeline. Last couple of questions would just be around any unexpected roadblocks or challenges that you kind of experienced as you were implementing this new process.
Yeah, I think we kind of addressed it in the beginning, but I can be very like ambitious, even though we like, you really tried to niche down, because we decided to take the approach of like multi-threading with the account. It took us longer than anticipated to reach all of the right, you know, contacts at each account. When we did the level of personalization, like I said, it was manual. Everybody had a different piece of doing that. But at the end of the day, we're all doing other things too, you know? So I was like, okay, I can do X amount of these a week, you know? But if you're really taking into account of sending like a personalized message to somebody, that doesn't just take you like 30 seconds to write and send out, right? You have to do a little bit of research, figuring out what they might care about. And so that, I think that part, we just kind of monitored and scaled back and said like, okay, this is a little bit more realistic after we've been doing this for like 2 or 3 weeks.
I think that's super smart. Just to also, I think often we get in our heads, like when we launch a program, we launch it, we set it, we forget it, and we just follow the process. And we don't actually think through, this was a version one, and that's probably going to have multiple iterations. And iterations aren't a bad thing. Complete direction changes sometimes, but like if you just iterate on a process, that's a great thing. So
totally agree. And we actually scheduled check-ins before launching, which was amazing. So we'd come back as a team, that same team that helped build this. Okay, what? And we would literally say that, okay, everybody come with your challenges, your roadblocks. Like I do remember one of our AEs being like, you honestly had such a busy week because he was like closing deals. I'm like, that's fine. That's what we want you to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it just kind of has to take like a back seat. And then we're like, oh, do we bring somebody else in? And then you can kind of work together, because you never want people to feel like, you know, they're like, you know, not supported, but like quote failing or not doing their part, where it's like, no, they're actually doing all this other really critical, important work at the same time.
Yeah. And it's funny, we're doing a ClickUp implementation for project management. And I had a team member that was like, I don't know what I'm going to do once this build process is done. And I was like, manage it. Like, and update it and optimize it. Like, this is not a build once and then it's good forever. Like, things will change. So I love the call out and just the, hey, I had too good of a week on sales and I couldn't do our prospecting process. Ah, darn. Like, I love it.
Yeah. Like, okay, I'll take that problem, right? You know, but then when other people outside of this kind of project team are like, oh, I thought you guys said this would take you, you know, 8 weeks or whatever the timeline was. It's like, well, no, it's taking us longer, but because of this. And everyone's like, oh, okay. You know, versus like, oh, marketing's behind, or marketing and whatever is behind on this ABM program. It's like, well, we have the reason why, and you should be happy about the reason.
Yep. So. Amazing. All right. I mean, last two questions. One, are there any results that you could share from this kind of new process that you guys ended up building?
Yeah. So we were able to build like kind of brand new 20 opportunities within the first like 90 days, which is like actually kind of incredible. Keep in mind, this was not net new cold outbound, right? So, but like, that's fine, right? I think the key for it was also, it's the ideal opportunities that we want at the right deal size.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Trust me when I say we're helping people build out a lot of programs and they always want to start on like, oh, I want to start with like third party intent and go completely cold. And I want the results in the first 60 days. And it's like,
yeah,
highly unlikely. Like you might, but like highly unlikely. I just think everybody should start with like bringing in the right people. Cause the other thing is, now that the process is built, as you warm up cold accounts that are likely going to be warm 6 months from now, that process still exists.
Yes.
And you can bring them into the pipeline way more easily. Sorry, I get really passionate about that specifically.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Cause like the goal of that is they go from unaware to aware. Cause you just have to be realistic about it. Right. And no one wants to hear you say that, but it's really the truth when you're dealing with like an account that's like never been to a website, never, as far as you can tell, is really just not interacted with your brand at all. It's like, actually, that's an amazing goal if you can get them from unaware to aware within 60 days. So
I think I've said it in almost every podcast that I've done in the past year, but nobody can buy from you if they don't know that you exist. So like, nobody likes to hear it, but ABM awareness programs are not a bad thing. Like,
yeah,
it's just realistic goals matched with the current state of the account and their buyer's journey. So,
yep.
That said, last question, any other advice that you just feel like, look, I've got a microphone to share with a bunch of ABMers. Like, here's how I would recommend getting started, or something that I wish I had known before I got started.
Yeah. Great question. I kind of talked about it throughout, but I think the collaboration is probably the most crucial things besides data. It's always hard to pick one, but you can still have the data and run the program. But I think the collaboration is key. And, you know, I've been in marketing my whole career and worked with many different types of like sales leaders and on that side. So my best advice is to find someone who is as passionate, energetic, growth-minded, let's iterate, let's fix the process. It keeps going, like level of understanding as you. And kind of surprise, it doesn't have to be the sales leader. It can be anyone within that organization that's on board. It could be the BDR team. It could be AEs themselves. It could be sales enablement. You know, like it just has to be somebody on that side to kind of be your partner in crime. And I've done that at many organizations where I've like kind of, you can kind of see who it is, like who wants to help, who wants to collaborate. And it can be at any role and you seek them out and like explain it, ask them. And, you know, you'd be surprised how many people that are like, absolutely, let's do this. Let's figure it out. You know?
I think that is genius advice. And I don't get me wrong, you always have to have alignment, but I've actually heard from a lot of people, they built ABM kind of in secret. They don't recommend this always, but like you get the BD team on board, they just happen to start doing things, and sales leaders are like, wow, this is great. This is working. And it's like, so we've been working with marketing really closely and we figured out how to go to market together. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll do ABM now. So like, I have a love-hate relationship because I think every large company has recommended to like do the ABM roadshow to get everybody on board. I'm like, you just need a team. Like you need two BDRs or like a seller and that's it. Yep. Like just prove out the model.
Exactly. You just need a project team of the same like-minded people that are like willing to dig in and test and try and iterate. And yep. Yeah, I would say like, don't do it without the, you know, sales management leadership completely not knowing. That's really never a good way to go. But as long as you say like, hey, I'm working with, you know, X, Y, and Z, and we're going to like kind of build this together for some target accounts and stuff, happy to share. I also think that's a really good thing that if, once you have it kind of built out or documented, just like heads up, you know, this is what we're building. This is the plan. Let me know if you have any questions. So Then they're like, know if they choose to like get in the weeds and the details and things like that. And then to your point on their one-on-ones or their team meetings, when they bring up, oh, I'm doing X, Y, and Z and with marketing, it's not like, what's going on? So,
yeah, I think that's a great way to frame it is build the plan, present the plan and say like, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. What do you guys think? And then they're like, sure, give it a shot. We were both at Golden Hour and like, I can't remember his name, Colin worked at Salesforce and like built like the Salesforce streaming service completely in secret. And then was like, hey boss, I built a streaming service. And the boss was like, all right, I guess we'll go. So like probably not always advisable, but sometimes not the worst idea. So anyway, Tara, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Go on over there.
I don't know why I ask anymore. It's always LinkedIn. Is there anywhere else you'd like to point people?
I mean, of course, you know, I encourage you to check out Revenue Grid. Obviously, our website is probably the best there, but also GetAccept. Once a GetAcceptor, always a GetAcceptor. And we talked about that a little bit today. So encourage you to check them out as well.
I love it. Well, again, Tara, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. And we'll see you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.